What the Tech is sponsored by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/Andrew.
What the Tech?
Everybody, welcome to What the Tech. I'm Andrew Zarian. Today is our 200th episode of What the Tech, Paul.
Oh.
Congratulations.
You mentioned this was coming up to me, and I said something like, I think my initial reaction was right, but I wasn't on the first X number of episodes or something, and I don't know if you ever looked it up.
I think it was like you came in at like 79 or 80, yeah. 89, something like that. But you've been here for the majority of the show.
So I'm like the Sammy Hagar of What the Tech.
Listen, I was never a big fan of Van Hagar, but I'll take it. I mean, it's a possibility.
Yeah.
Who replaced the original lead singer of AC/DC?
Brian Johnson.
You're the Brian Johnson of What the Tech.
Brian Johnson. I would accept that.
Yeah. I thought he did a better job. So, yeah, 200 episodes.
Black is better than anything that band made before that. That's, I mean, well, okay. People are going to disagree with that. But I actually like Brian Johnson.
200 episodes we're in. I don't know how people are still watching. There's 210 people in our chat room today. So apparently people are watching. They're joining the chat. They're watching us live. If you're in our chat room, you could change your nickname in our chat room by going to the little settings button on the bottom of the chat room and just hitting change nickname. Makes it easy for us to follow the chat. Paul, before we start our show, there's so much to talk about. I want to do an uninterrupted show. I want to talk about Audible for a little bit.
Okay.
They've been with us since day one of the show. They've been a big supporter of the GFK Network and, of course, of What the Tech. And they're offering a phenomenal deal to our audience. AudiblePodcast.com/Andrew. Go there. And you get a free audiobook. And Paul's a big Audible fan. I'm a big Audible fan. I actually just downloaded the new Audible app on my phone. I'm one of these weird people that never uses his phone for any kind of like entertainment, just for my phone. Like, I'll go Facebook and stuff. But I never watch movies. I never watch podcast or listen to audiobooks on my phone. I've been using another device to do that, most likely an iPad or an iPod or the 520 that I got. I just installed Audible on this thing, and it's excellent. It works so well. I was surprised how good it works, and I like it better than the iOS version of Audible on my Android phone. Now, Paul, you have an Audible pick, and what's your pick?
Yeah, this is one my friend's been recommending me to me for a while as a book, and then his wife actually read it and said, "Yeah, you got to read this. This is like one of the best books I've ever read." And it's called Endurance: Shackleton's Incredible Voyage. And this is the team that went down to the South Pole, or went down to Antarctica, I should say, to be the first to cross the continent of Antarctica on foot. And then they got caught up in the ice and snow, and their boat got crushed, and history kind of happened. But I'm only a little bit into it. I mean, I know the story, but it's really well told. It's a fascinating story. And there's a lot of little kind of historical tidbits right up front that I had never known about. For example, the day that this boat left England to go make this voyage and to hopefully make history, Britain declared war on Germany and World War I started. You know, well, World War I probably started a couple of days earlier, but Britain declared war. And he didn't want to go, and he contacted the Admiralty, and they just sent him a one-word telegram back that said "proceed," you know, and told, you know, basically, you know, get going and do what you got to do. So, fascinating story. And like I said, like this is one of those good Audible books because the narrator is kind of perfect for the book.
I'm a history fan, but I don't know that much about World War I. I mean, I know the obvious, you know, why it started, what happened, who won, who was involved, but I really don't know the nitty gritty of it.
No, nobody does. It's so convoluted and weird.
Like, you have the Ottoman Empire, and
it's like all the players are. It sounds on the surface like a lot like World War II. It's like Germany, France, Britain, and it's like no. It's the like you said. It's like these. It's the fading days of these old world kind of European empires. A lot of weird groups or countries, I guess, that have different kind of allies and are forced to kind of go to war and. it's just a it's such a bizarre
and none of thing. Nobody's around anymore. None of, like, half of those countries don't exist.
Yeah. Well, certainly not in the form they were in, yeah, at the time. Yeah, that's true.
Interesting pick. I'm going to check it out. Audiblepodcast.com/Andrew. Get a free audiobook and let them know that we sent you. We're friends with the guys at Audible, and we support. We're so happy about their, about them supporting the show, because they've been with us forever at this point. They continue to support us, much like you, the audience. I don't know about I'm supporting it. I gave up halfway through. Paul's just showing up at this point.
Just showing up.
You know, we don't care anymore. So, Paul, let's talk about the big news. This rumor came out. I think it came out last week when we were doing the show. Was the name being put out, or like right around that time?
The Microsoft CEO name.
Yeah.
I mean, he's always been a leading candidate, and he's certainly always been the leading internal candidate. And I think once it was very clear that Alan Mulally was not going to be the next CEO of Microsoft, he became sort of the
Was he a serious contender for the CEO position? Because I never imagined he would leave Ford for Microsoft.
Alan Mulally. No. Yeah. Well, we don't know. Right now, as of right now, we don't know. My suspicion is, because of the way that that went down and the amount of time it took and the fact that Ford's board actually publicly called on him to make clear his intentions and then he didn't for over a month. That yes, he was in fact a serious contender, and I think things were on hold while that got sorted out. I mean, obviously Mulally wasn't an ideal candidate in some ways, but
I mean, he was the name, right? Like, he was the cool name that people liked for the headline.
Yeah, I mean, almost that came out of my mouth when Steve Ballmer announced he was going to leave was, I didn't say Microsoft should hire Alan Mulally. I said Microsoft needs a guy like Alan Mulally. And then I thought, wait a minute. He's friends with Steve Ballmer. I wonder, is this even possible? And it's one of those things, I think the more you look into it, you know, a decade earlier, or if he had been a decade younger, I guess, that might have made more sense. It might have made a lot of sense, but it didn't happen.
I mean, Microsoft is an institution. They have a very specific culture within the company that they all follow, and they have a specific mindset. So for me to kind of look at an outsider to come in, it really doesn't make as much sense as you hire from within someone that is in that environment for, you know, a long period of time.
Yes and no. I mean, the one thing I would say to that is that one of the interesting side stories to this CEO ascension that just occurred, and actually I think the side stories here are in some ways more interesting than him being CEO, is that Bill Gates, contrary to every public statement he's ever made, is going to come back to more of a daily role at Microsoft and is going to devote more time at Microsoft and will be a special advisor to the CEO. I think his actual title is technology advisor. Now, I don't want to talk too much about Alan Mulally, but if you consider any outsider coming into Microsoft and how awful that could be for that person, it's not hard to imagine Bill Gates doing the same exact thing for that person in a way, is a way to ease the transition. And so it's not impossible that someone could have done it. Frankly, I think that this situation where someone is kind of there next to him a little bit, it's kind of a strange thing to say, like you need handholding, but you know, we've talked a lot about how big and complex Microsoft is. It makes sense, you know, assuming Bill Gates is capable and willing, which he apparently is.
I mean, there's a major shakeup all across the board, but with Satya Nadella, this is a guy on the enterprise side, and he's on a side that's been doing tremendous business for Microsoft. Yes. A very successful business. He's a guy that's been with them for 22 years and understands how the company works.
Yep.
Are there any other names coming out saying, like, you know, who else was being considered from within, or was it a unanimous? According to them, it was a unanimous decision. Yeah, this is the guy that they wanted, and this is who was going to do it. But I'm curious to know if there were any other names.
Yeah, I mean, we both are. They're almost certainly never going to admit to that. This was done solely by Microsoft's board. I mean, the chances of that leaking out are slim to none. I don't think so. I found the very comment, you know, John Thompson said something I'm not going to get this exactly right, but he said, you know, he was our first and unanimous choice.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, that's probably not true. But
and it's weird okay. that they have to tell you. So, you know, they have to make sure you know that there was nobody else being considered mm-hmm. for the stockholders, mm-hmm. obviously.
Well, you want to ease this as much as possible. Microsoft has only had two CEOs since, what, 1976 or whenever they were, when they first went into business. The two guys were best friends, and so that transition, which actually wasn't all that smooth internally, as it turns out, but was made to be smooth or made to appear smooth to the outside, what it could be considered one long kind of era or error, I suppose, depending on how you look at it. This is different. This is a younger guy. It's an Indian guy. It's a different Microsoft. You know, this is a different era. Microsoft is not on the top of the world dominating the entire tech industry. You know, you want to do this in such a way that people perceive it as a positive move, not as something scary and uncertain.
I read the letter he sent out to all the Microsoft employees, and it was interesting, the tone in that letter. I'm going to try to remember the best I can, but he said, like, we have to innovate, and we have to innovate now. This has to be something that we do now. We have to be a quick Microsoft. We have to be a Microsoft that takes action. And I found that refreshing to see, you know, him coming out like that.
He's a great guy. I mean, he's very candid and very well spoken, and very, you know, he's an engineer, so he's very technical. And I think I'm not going to sit here and jump up.
Well, it's a different thinking process. You know, when you have an engineer running your company, when you have a marketing guy covering handling your company, it's going to be totally different. Ballmer and Gates, perfect example. Ballmer was a marketing guy.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people look at Ballmer and they try to justify this whole time he was CEO, and they'll say, well, you know, Microsoft, you know, returned so much value to shareholders, and they generated X number of revenues, and he was a money guy and a numbers guy and all that kind of stuff. And he's sort of, I mean, I actually think of him as more of a marketing guy, like you said, than a businessman or whatever. Certainly not an engineer. I think we can agree to that. But Satya Nadella is an engineer. And, you know, not everyone agrees with this, but I think there's a big contingent of Microsoft watchers or Microsoft fans or Microsoft customers, whatever, who believe that this firm should be led by an engineer, that it should be an engineering driven company. And so, honestly, within that circle, especially, he is an excellent choice.
Sinofsky, what was Sinofsky's background?
Engineering.
Oh, he was an outcome. Okay. Well, I mean, I was going to try to prove a point, which didn't happen. I thought it was engineering, but,
yeah,
isn't it interesting? Because 2 years ago, we probably would have been talking about how he was the new CEO of the company.
There was a time when I was convinced that he would be the next CEO and that he was the right choice. And it was before I got to know him better, you know. And I think, I mean, everyone has, you know, good side, you know, good parts and bad parts and all that kind of stuff. I think ultimately, I said this kind of in a humorous fashion, but I think I actually hit it on the nail on the head with him at one point where I finally realized this guy is like MacArthur. You know, he's the right person in MacArthur's case to wage World War II. But when Korea happens, eventually that guy's going to want to nuke China, and then you have to pull him out of there because he's insane. And I made that crack about Sinofsky.
It's actually really funny.
Which ended up being one of the few really prescient things I ever said. Because, you know, he was the right guy to turn around Windows with Windows 7. Then he went crazy and he did Windows 8 in a very one-sided fashion.
I mean, but the turnaround with Windows 7, Paul, it obviously there was going to be a turnaround.
Yep.
Right? I mean, no matter what they put out after Vista, it would have been a turnaround because the PR would not have been there. That negative stigma with the operating system would not have been there. They could have put out the same exact thing and said, well, technically they did, right? A lighter version of Vista.
Yep,
and it you know has a reputation even now, years later.
Yeah. No, and absolutely, that was something I came to later on. You know, it occurred to me because you're convinced this guy is doing a great job. You know, he did Windows 7; it was the most successful version of Windows ever made. He must know what he's doing, right? He has a plan, and you hear these early stories about Windows 8 about how you know whether they're apocryphal or not. You know, where he had gone to CES whatever year, you know, and all of the screens had fingerprints on them because everyone was touching the screens. And he thought, this is what people do. When he called his lieutenants, you know, Jensen Harris and Julie Larson Green, whoever else, and said, you got to come down to Vegas right now. You got to look at this. And that was kind of the genesis of Windows 8. And of course, this story is designed to prove or at least suggest that Microsoft was on board multi-touch computing before the iPad shipped.
Sure. Yada, yada. But, sure.
You know, I mean, I think we can all agree that this didn't go as well as they wanted.
So. I mean, I've read a lot of arguments on why the new CEO for Microsoft is not the right guy. And one of the most ridiculous ones that I read was that he may not be in touch with what the consumer wants because he's an enterprise guy.
Yeah. Well, I understand. I mean, where that comes from.
It's valid, but not really. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I mean, it's kind of hard to say. I mean, it's fair to say that he has not led a division at the company that was devoted to or largely focused on consumer goods and so forth. But, you know, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, Microsoft is a big company, and the CEO's job is not to micromanage the entire company. It's to put the right people in the right places and make sure they make the right decisions, to back the big bets, and, you know, to take credit when things go right, to take the blame when stuff goes wrong. And we'll see. I mean, right as of right now, they're on the same path they've always been on or have been on for the past year and a half, let's say. And, you know, that means devices and services. It means they're doing Surface. They're buying Nokia. They're going to have Lumia. They're still doing Windows 8 / whatever and then Windows 9. They will probably combine Windows Phone with Windows RT and whatever. And they're still going forward with this. And so we'll see. You know, I don't know. It's not possible to prejudge him. It's not a Minority Report. You know, we'll have to see what he does.
So the other big story is that Bill Gates is stepping down as the chairman of the board, being replaced by Thompson. Not surprised because there was some rumors coming out. Why that move? I'm curious on why Bill Gates is stepping down from that position.
All the Bill Gates stuff to me is about perception, right? So
it's a new Microsoft. Is that what they're trying to do?
It's about this balance because on the one hand you have these people who say we need someone to come in from the outside and independently assess what's going on in this company and get rid of the stuff that doesn't make sense and really push the stuff that does make sense. But that person can't do that if Bill Gates and Steve Ballmer are pulling the strings, you know, like the puppet masters from the board. And on the other hand, you've got these people who say, oh, man, I really wish Bill Gates had never stepped down. Everything was great when he was CEO. If only he could be more involved with the day-to-day at Microsoft, that would solve all of our problems. You know, we don't need a marketing guy like Alan Mulally, actually, or Steve Ballmer. We need an engineer. And so you bring in the engineer, but how do you appease the other guys? I mean, one of the ways is to get him off the board. Actually, he's not off the board. Get him out of the chairman position. Bring him in to the CEO office on a kind of a third time basis, whatever we call that, one third time, and install him as kind of a technical advisor. Because the perception is that Bill Gates did a great job at that stuff. I actually don't think that's true, whatever that's worth.
But Bill Gates did a great job at that stuff when?
Long time ago.
Yeah.
And actually, like I said, I don't think he did that great of a job. I mean, I think Bill Gates benefited from some timing type things. And was, in fact, a better businessman than he was a technologist.
I think
Steve Ballmer didn't benefit from some timing things.
Well, do you think that Ballmer was a better technologist than Bill Gates?
No. No. But, in assessing Ballmer's tenure as CEO, you know, months ago, I looked up, you know, what really happened here? I mean, how do we judge this guy? And ultimately, my own opinion is that the Ballmer years were inevitable and were not his fault. You know, that this was going to happen anyway. That this company that had been going up and up and up was going to have to plateau and probably fall down. And that there was nothing they could really do about it. The types of changes that have occurred in this industry that I honestly, in many ways, were just triggered by Apple. The smartphone as we know it today, multi-touch-based smartphones, and this new kind of media tablet market, which was touched off by the iPad, could not have come from Microsoft. There was no person who would have come into Microsoft to make that happen.
Yeah.
Because if you had suggested to Microsoft that we need to stop emphasizing Windows and focus on tablets. We need to stop emphasizing PCs and focus on phones. You know, 10 years ago or 8 years ago, whatever, that person would have been laughed out of that office. It was not possible for the Microsoft of 10 years ago to make these changes. It's not Steve Ballmer's fault. It's a legacy of the company's history.
Well, and Nadella had an interesting quote. He goes, our industry does not respect tradition, it respects innovation.
Yeah.
If I'm going to read...
We can respect it, but there's not much you can do about, yeah, you know, with history. It's just history.
I mean, to me, when I read that, I'm like, ooh, that says something interesting about Microsoft and legacy.
Well, you know, Microsoft is a company that has done a tremendous job with older businesses and not so tremendous of a job with some newer businesses, right? I mean, there are actually kind of newer Microsoft businesses that are big businesses that people don't really know much about.
So where are people going? Where's the enterprise market headed if they're not going with Microsoft?
Well, the enterprise market is going with Microsoft. That's the one part of Microsoft that's going gangbusters and is doing well. And in fact, that's where this guy came from. And that's why this guy is potentially such a great choice for CEO, because he took a serious legacy part of the company and moved it to the cloud. But he also did it in a way that his competitors could not do, which was to provide these kind of hybrid solutions where there are going to be some companies that need everything in-house. They want their own data centers or whatever. There are going to be some companies that are newer or more nimble, at least, that want everything in the cloud. But then there's this huge existing customer base that maybe wants to move to the cloud, maybe wants to move part of the infrastructure to the cloud, and Microsoft can provide them with kind of a hybrid deployment option that Google can't offer, that these other companies can't offer. And so it's kind of a unique position, and he played a large part in that.
In as far as the company goes, as far as Microsoft goes, there's always been that comparison with IBM and how... Yeah. Oh, they're becoming the new IBM, right? And that was a positive when they're becoming the good IBM. And then it became a negative. Well, they're becoming a good IBM in the late 90s. I really think they did become IBM, but they became what IBM should have become.
You know,
With enterprise and with corporate. And I mean, they've innovated while IBM really stayed.
So I don't follow IBM. I mean, I think the story that I could tell you about IBM is that IBM absolutely was at one time what Microsoft was at one time, right? The dominant force in the personal computer market. They evolved into kind of a services company. And by services, I literally don't mean services like Microsoft means it, like online services. I mean, they service enterprises. You know, yeah, they provide a service, not like a digital service. That's not interesting to me. And so I don't know a lot about it. But the interesting thing about IBM is that there's some evidence now that that market is not actually viable for going forward, and that they might have some issues of their own. And it's you know, they went through a transformation to get to from where they were, which many people would have said was like a hardware company or whatever, but I think it was more complex than that. But a hardware, software, services company to a services company. You know, Microsoft is going through this transition as well. Transformation. And so we'll see. You know, the question for me is whether Microsoft is interesting on the other side of it. I mean, just as someone who cares about personal technology, personal computers, these devices and these services and things, I mean, the more that Microsoft has to lean on this enterprise stuff, the less interesting in some ways it is to me personally. Yeah. You know, I care about technology and how it can impact individuals. Especially and primarily.
I like the consumer side more than anything else. I find it far more interesting, but there is something to be said about enterprise and how they're adapting it and making it viable for many, many different corporations. And it's something that it's their lifeline now, but they're working on it to kind of grow rather than just being the same old thing for enterprise. They kind of have to, they understand that.
Yeah, Microsoft is, you know, this the comparison to IBM is it, when people make that often, it is a dig, right? Because people hear IBM and they don't think fast, dynamic, nimble company. They think slow moving Leviathan from days gone by. You know, Microsoft has embraced a lot of these kind of forward leaning technological trends in ways that I think people would be shocked by on the enterprise side. The whole consumerization of IT and the bring your own device to work stuff, which has kind of evolved into bring your own everything to work. Microsoft is actually on the forefront of that stuff, and it's you don't hear a lot about it, but the truth is they've done a great job with that. I think the problem is on the other side, they don't really have a great consumer base to work off of, not because there aren't a lot of consumers still using their stuff, but because those people just don't necessarily care about it or it doesn't resonate with them in any way. I don't think most people have like a personal relationship with Windows or something, whereas maybe they kind of do with Android or iOS, not because those systems are better, but because they happen to run on the devices that are more personal, you know, and they develop more of a one-to-one relationship with that thing.
Hey, if you guys are watching live, I know that Daily Motion is having some issues. You could switch to Vaughn or JTV or Ustream, and it should clear up the issues. Paul, I got a tweet from a viewer about your little interference issue.
Yeah, I saw that.
And actually, it makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Does it?
Because it started when you got that new modem.
So just two sides to this. One is because it's interference. I'm not connected wirelessly, obviously, but this thing is sitting right here. So the theory is that it's throwing off.
Yeah.
It's giving me cancer, is what you're saying.
I think so. And I remember you moved it closer, right? You had moved the router.
Well, no, it's here. It's just here. I mean, it's never really moved, but it is new. It's new to my. My Xfinity changeover. So I'm trying to remember. It's weird because you know on the this one has kind of a strange network address.
So I think how it works is that even though it's on automatic, it's probably on channel 11.
Yeah, so I could change it to a different channel, and you're saying maybe that would fix it.
Yeah, possibly.
So I will. I don't know if I'll do it during the show, but I will. I will do that.
Let's see what happens. Well. Let's see what happens. We'll go black. It's all right. Well, Paul does that.
I just got to figure out how to get into it. For some reason, I'm not able to hit it on the.
So, Paul, where do you see the influence on the board now? Because obviously, Ballmer's still on the board, still a tremendous shareholder of the company. So is Gates. So, how much influence do they have to the day to day of Microsoft? Considering they're the biggest shareholders.
Well, so they are the biggest shareholders, but they also have pretty small percentages of the Microsoft stock. So I don't think they have a big impact on the day-to-day as a board, right? Although I have to say, just to be clear, the interactions between a board of directors and the executive leadership of a company, the size and scope of Microsoft is something that we just can't know about. You know, yeah. We're not going, you know, it's just... They're not going to be talking about that kind of stuff. So it's kind of hard to say, but I don't think the day-to-day is big. I think getting Gates into the office with him to, you know, help him with strategy and specific products is a way to influence the day-to-day. And I think that's part of their plan to ensure that the day-to-day makes more sense or whatever. But I don't know. I don't know. You know, I'm not really sure how to... say what kind of influence they have day to day.
I mean, I'm excited for it. I'm excited to see where the company's going in the next, you know, 12 to 24 months. I mean, it's going to be an interesting year or two for Microsoft because there's a lot of stuff happening. Regardless, I think he's going to come off with a big bang with the next version of Windows because it's going to be a very similar situation to what happened with Vista and Windows 7. This guy's going to be praised for, you know, coming up with the new Windows in the eye of, you know, the regular.
Yeah,
TV viewer. When they say, you know, the new CEO and morale is up and all this stuff is up for the company, which I think is great, regardless of who did it, it's fine. So let's see what happens. Paul, you got your hands on 8.1. I don't want to stay on the Microsoft stuff too much, but you got your hands on the new update. I know, there's so much Microsoft.
Update one, yep.
What do you think of it? Yeah, because I read the article and you said that there were more surprises than you expected, more changes.
Yeah, although to be clear, there's small changes, right? There's nothing major in here. We're like, oh, look at this. It's some crazy new feature. It's just fine-tuning stuff. You know, I find it interesting that so many people have gotten it wrong with what the point of this is. I look at this as an extension of Windows 8.1, which, when you think about it, makes sense. In that I've often described how Windows 8.1 makes Windows better for whatever device you have. So if you have a tablet, you can stay in the Metro stuff. If you have a desktop computer or a traditional computer, you can stay on the desktop. And it does more of that. And so, you know, for people who live and breathe on the desktop side of the fence and, you know, maybe you don't have a touch interface, running Metro apps can appear on this on the taskbar where you would want to see them. Likewise, you can pin apps to the taskbar if you want. Those are actually two separate things when you think about it. For people on the Metro side, there's a bunch of little things. And when you use the start screen with a mouse or the app screen with a mouse, you right click and you know menus come up like they would on the desktop, not like the you know the app bar stuff that you would typically see in Metro. And so it's about making Metro better for normal users, and it's about making the desktop a little bit better for not really for touch users. It's kind of a stretch, but
I mean, the thing that makes sense, like you've said 1,000 times, it detects what kind of platform you're on, and then it adapts to that, and it works as if it's that. So if you're on a tablet, you're on Metro. If you're on a desktop, you're on Windows. That's it.
Yeah, it's not quite that elegant, but yeah, it's certainly heading in that direction. Yeah,
one could only hope. So
I don't look at it as like Windows 8.2. It's really the same themes that we see in 8.1, just kind of like with added salt.
Is there a reason why they didn't do 8.2?
Well, they still could, I suppose, but I think they want to get rid of the Windows 8 name.
Yeah,
and that was one of the things I heard with Windows 9, where you know that release could have been called 8.2, and they're like, you know,
let's just start over.
Let's move the name over, shall we?
All I could think of is that the marketing that they spent on Windows 8.
Sure.
The tremendous amount of money that they spent on marketing this thing at launch as this, you know, future operating system. And
well, but the good news is, you know, Windows 8 as a brand, it suggests kind of a version number. It's the version that comes after Windows 7, you know. Windows 9 will do the same. And so they're not shedding it's not like they're not calling it Windows, right? I mean, it's just a version number. So that kind of helps.
So, Paul, I went to a concert yesterday. I went to the Billy Joel concert at the Garden. Not the Boston Garden, the real Garden.
No, I understand. The Garden, yeah. I caught that.
The real Garden.
Oh, jeez. Okay.
So I went to the Billy Joel concert, and next to me, obviously everybody has iPhones, right?
Yeah.
The entire world. I have this LG G2, which is the worst camera I could ever imagine. It's actually shocking how bad the camera is, and at times, it's so good you start questioning what you're doing wrong, but it's not you. It's just the cameras auto detect right. Whatever nonsense.
Is my hand unusually shaky?
Like it's so bad, Paul. Like I'm like maybe I don't really know how to take a photo. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. Well, it's not you. It's all that auto crap that they put on this thing. Pretty much, you have to manually set the ISO in order to get a good picture. If you want to get a good video shot, forget about it. There's no hope. The focus is all whacked out. It has no idea what it's focusing on. So my wife had the iPhone, and she was, you know, getting amazing photos. And next to me was a guy, and he had a 1020. He had a really? Lumia. So
I bet he was taking awesome pictures.
Well, I asked him, I'm like, listen, it's going to sound crazy, but can I take a picture with your phone? I'm just curious what it looks like. So I did the zoom in thing. Oh, my God. It was like he was front row. I mean, it was...
You must have seen that I took some concert pictures a while back.
It was insane.
Yeah.
It was insane how good the 1020 is.
Yep.
I just don't understand like the quality difference. By the way, I didn't do video on the 1020. I did a regular picture, but I can't understand why. And this camera's praised, by the way. People say, oh, well, every one of these reviews that I did with these idiots that do these reviews, everyone, you know, the camera's actually really good. If you're looking for an Android phone, this is the best camera to get. This is the one you want because it has that stability thing. So the sensor apparently adapts when you move it. I don't even know. I think what's happening is that it's moving regardless.
Yep.
It's so bad, the camera. And they've updated, by the way. They've sent out an update to fix some of the stuff. But I've never... Like, I'm thinking, I'm like, okay, I understand ISO, right? Like, that's what people that know this stuff does. They understand this. What if I'm like the average person and everything's on auto and I'm trying to take a picture? It's impossible. I have to set the ISO at, like, 400 in order for it to take a decent photo, which is really dark. Or I'm sorry, I got to set it to like 800 to take a decent photo.
So it doesn't have like a mode or something.
It has all these things, but it means nothing. I mean, it's it has like night view, and it's the same thing as automatic. It's insane, actually, how bad it is. So I'm actually, because of this experience, I want to go get a Windows phone for my everyday use.
Andrew.
Yes. Andrew. Yes.
This is the happiest day of my life.
This is your present, Paul. This is episode 200. This is your present. I don't even know what to say. I was so disappointed in the camera. I was so disappointed. And I realized that's what I like doing. I like to take pictures with of things. Mostly,
well, I think that's the deal, right? Everyone. You know, sometimes people will write me and they'll say, wow, you spend so much time talking about like photos. Like, you know, that's not the only thing that you do on a camera, you know, it's like on a phone. Yeah, I get that, but I don't know. To me, it's like, again, my usage isn't necessarily everyone's. I get that. I work at home, for example, you know, but you know, when I'm out in the world with my smartphone, I mean, that's big for me, really big. I think it might be the primary activity.
You're taking photos.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not.
It's got to be in the top three. I mean, regardless.
It has to be in the top three for everybody. But I feel like.
Hope so.
Like, what do? I go out, right? And I'm having dinner. What do I take a picture of? I take a picture of my drink and I take a picture of the food. Mm-hmm. And if there's a cool shot, I'll take a picture of whatever. Like yesterday, I took a picture of my wife at the train. It took me 15 tries to get this photo to look semi-decent. Let me see if I can pull this up. Actually, I'm also going to pull up a video. Just to compare how awful this is. How will I get into trouble if I air a... Let's see. Oh, here we go. I'm not going to play the music. So this is from the concert.
You're talking... Wait a minute.
Here's the video.
Yep.
So as you can see, it's trying to focus. Okay, it focused in. And then it goes back.
Yeah.
My wife took the same video, and it's fine. I mean, it's awful. I understand it's dark, but it can't even focus. Let me see if I got a picture here. So this is when I finally figured out that I have to like play around with the manual ISO.
Right.
It's still not that great. I mean, I understand it's dark, but let's see if I got another one here. We're playing. So perfect example of how awful the camera is here. How would you evaluate this photo, Paul?
You know, blurry.
There was no movement. I mean, that was super still. Sorry for the people listening. I apologize that I'm going on this rant and I'm playing photos. But I mean, just insane how bad it is. So now what do I get? I'm on Verizon. Nothing?
Not yet. I mean, so Mobile World Congress is happening in like 2 weeks, less. There'll be lots of announcements there. I would be shocked if Nokia's 929, whatever they're calling it, icon, wasn't announced there. Basically, what that should be is a device that's roughly the size of a Nexus 5, but has a camera that's on par with what's in the 1020. And so I don't know if you ever used the Lumia 1520, which is the kind of phablet phone. That one has a slightly less powerful camera, but honestly, the picture quality is as good, if not better, than the 1020.
Why?
And that's the camera that's going to be in the 920.
Okay, so crazy question here. Why is it that the Nokia cameras, Nokia has kind of focused in on the camera, and they've really put in effort in, even on the 920, you know, the camera is really good. Mm-hmm. How is it that they've been able to do this, but, you know, like... For example, LG and Samsung, which I've used both. I've used the Samsung S4, and I don't think the camera's all that great on that either.
I don't know. I mean, I can tell you that the camera in the iPhone is fantastic. I mean, what does your wife have, an iPhone?
An iPhone 5.
5?
It's good.
I don't have
it's
a 5,
great.
But yeah, the 5S has a fantastic camera. It's really good, you know, for a phone. the way that Nokia was able to do it was to have, they have to have a camera bump, you know. So if you have like a 925, a 1020, or a 1520, there's a bump. Okay, it's a big bump on the 1020, and it's a small bump on the other ones. But you know, you need to have that physical space for the optics. It's something Apple won't do. They're not going to expand past the thickness of the device, and so that's, it's limited in that way, just by the physicality of it. The Android phones, I have no idea. I don't know.
It's really bad. I mean, this is such a disappointment. I almost wanted to pull like the card where I like contact them. I'm like, I'm going to bash you guys for weeks now on the show because how awful this thing is. Yeah. You should be embarrassed that you put this thing out and you sold this as like a photographer's phone. The entire campaign was on how great the camera is. It's just a piece of junk like every other camera that they put in these phones.
Right.
Crazy. All right, my rant is over with that stuff. But, Paul, let's talk about, before we actually go into something, I want to, since it's our 200th episode, I want to thank everybody that's been tuning in. We've had such a tremendous audience. We get such feedback from the audience. It really is unbelievable to see so many people turn out. I think Paul is surprised at how many people turn out for this.
People turn out for this?
A lot of people. Look at this. Almost 270 people in our chat room right now.
Oh. You're crazy. Missing Satya Nadella's live coming out party. It's like a debutante's ball or something. I don't
know what it is. Like a debutante's ball. It is. And for the people that are tuning in for the first time, I know a lot of people probably are tuning in for the first time. I want to let you guys know, we put all our shows on podcast form. So you can subscribe to us. We're on iPhone. We're on Windows Phone. We're on Stitcher. Subscribe on as many platforms as possible. Do like 2-3 times too. We could use all the help possible. We're also making some changes to the video podcast. So in the next couple of weeks, there's going to be some changes to the way that we handle video. We're definitely going to rely on your feedback to see if everything is working. So if the video's acting a little weird with the downloads, probably starting in about 2 weeks, let us know. So we could kind of fix that because we're moving the site over and we're doing a lot of changes to the way that we handle the RSS for the video. We're getting off of Blip and we're hosting it on our own. And of course, Paul, I want to thank you for joining me every week and doing this. And, you know, we BS a little bit and we rant and rave about technology. And I've always said the show is like two guys that are into tech sitting at a bar.
Yeah. I mean, right. It's just a conversation.
Yeah. That's it. We're not reporting the news. I'm not an expert. I'm an enthusiast. I like technology. And sometimes Paul has to put me in my place and say, what are you talking about? Well, with a lot of things, actually, with my taste in television, with my taste in drinks.
Alcohol is a tough one, honestly.
I had a Pinot Gris the other night.
Yeah. I told Mary Jo today, this is just kind of an aside, just to know that you come up occasionally in conversation elsewhere. I was talking about beer and whatever. And I said, you know, somebody came to my Super, you know, to my house for the Super Bowl, and we're kind of cleaning up, and there's like three Corona lights in my refrigerator.
Yeah.
She's like, oh, that's disgusting. And I'm like, it's like Andrew visited.
Yeah. I've gotten really good with the beer stuff, actually. I got a Press 195, which is a phenomenal bar restaurant right by me. They're not a paid ad, nothing like that. And I sit at the bar and I just, every time they got something new, I drink it and then I tweet it to MJ and she'll tell me if she approves or not. I was drinking Sly Fox this week. Sly Fox was my new beer of the week. It's a Pilsner.
Okay.
Yeah. And then we're going to start a new show here. It's called This Week in Pinot Gris. We're going to start that here on the GFK Network.
Right.
So, Paul, I want to talk to you about Chromecast.
Okay.
Google announced that they're opening it up to developers. They've opened up the SDK. It's available right now for download. And potentially Chromecast will work on any Android device. I'm sorry, on any Android application.
Yeah, where they write to the SDK.
They write to the SDK. Yes. And it to me, it's not so much the services like Pandora and Netflix, but it's the gaming that can have a can benefit from this.
So I think there's all kinds of things that can benefit from this, but
because this was one of your complaints early on that it was so close. It was only X amount of applications that were available.
Right. I mean, when the thing first shipped, there was almost nothing available. And, you know, my initial reaction to it was very negative. And actually, I don't remember when I did this, and I'm not even sure if we ever discussed it, but let's say a week or so ago, I looked at it again. And of course, in the intervening months, you know, many more services have come online. And I tried it with my Android devices. I tried it with iOS. And I still feel like it's a little bit convoluted from a setup perspective compared to, say, a Roku or Apple TV. I still think that the requiring you to use that device as the remote is ridiculous because phones go to sleep. And so you're watching TV or whatever it is, like a movie. The phone rings. You want to pause it. You got to enter your code. You know, it's crazy, like how just simple a little thing like a remote can make the experience so much better. But whatever, you know, like honestly, the quality of the video is pretty fantastic. It works well with Google services and with a handful of other services that are, you know, useful to me. It's not horrible. Opening that thing up, there you go. Smart. I mean, I was reading, I almost wrote about it. I feel like, you know, sometimes people get a little burned if I write too much stuff, but you know, Chrome, or I should say Google, is obviously a competitive threat to Microsoft. And this stuff is obviously a competitive threat to the living room stuff. And, you know, it's getting better. And this is one of the ways it gets better.
What do you think of the Amazon story? We touched on it last week, but do you think it could be a serious competitor when it comes to gaming in the living room with their console?
No.
You don't think it's not something that could, can anybody?
I'm sure they will, and I don't think they're a serious threat to Roku either. I think that's foolish for them to do that.
So who do you think is?
Who is what? A serious?
Like a secondary console, you know, like the casual gamer's console for the living room. Obviously, it's not going to be, we're not talking about Xbox or PlayStation.
Maybe there's no need for this. I mean, gaming is a very personal thing. You know, if you picture four people sitting in a living room, unless they're actual gamers or kids or something, two of them are not going to be playing a game together on a TV. They're going to be playing games alone on tablets or something. Two of them or three of them or four of them can watch TV at the same time. I mean, I think there's just a different way that we consume this kind of content. And obviously, people play video games together. I don't mean to downplay that, pardon the pun. But I don't think it's something that people do regularly, most people, most adult people. So I don't think there is a market for that, really.
Because I always think about what Apple has delayed, you know, what they potentially could have done 2 years ago that they haven't done yet. I was asking a couple of people. I still have yet to do it. I haven't used the AirPlay feature to play a game on my TV. But people say, you know, it's delayed. It's not instant. It's not real time. There's a delay in the way that it works. And obviously, that's not going to cut it if you become a console. But I'm just, to me, I've always tried to understand they have a tremendous, tremendous platform of games. I mean, thousands, hundreds of thousands potentially that they have. And they're pretty good for what they are. I still consider
they have to be able to make that transition.
Why? But
to the new experience, right?
Yeah, but why has it been difficult for them to make that transition? Why can't you get it to work on?
Well,
the
it
TV?
May be latency, it may be other things, but I can assure you, if this could have been done well, Apple would have already done it. You know, they're not doing it because they're. You know, they just don't feel like it. There's just no. I don't think it's a good experience.
Well, and, I mean, they've looked at the Apple TV as a hobby, as they've said, and now, you know, I was reading the headlines.
Sure,
a couple
but
days
I mean,
ago.
Why wouldn't you open it up to app developers and see what happens? I mean, it was many iOS developers would want to be on this platform. There just probably isn't too much value to it.
Well, that was going to be my point. I don't think they could make a lot of money from it, so they don't care to further develop it. They'll probably do it, but
the big players are all there, right? I don't know. You know, the Chromecast is $30, and so there's kind of a pioneer spirit there. And when you open something like that up, you're going to attract a certain audience, and that will be interesting. And it'll be weird, and it will be kind of Wild West, and there'll be a lot of semi-unprofessional stuff and all that kind of stuff.
But why not control it a little bit more than you're controlling, like, let's say with gaming, right? Forget about Android. Android I consider the Wild West. But to kind of go back to Apple TV, why not control the games that are coming on? Open it up to developers, but open it up to certain developers that you know could put out a quality product.
I don't. Because the problem with an Apple TV is that the thing kind of sits there. You know, people are upgrading their devices on a fairly regular basis, and you can kind of move it forward. I think there's a different vibe in the living room. I mean, obviously, there's some Apple guys who would buy every single thing this company puts out regardless. But I don't know. I just don't think this is a viable thing. You know, it's like when's one of these things going to take off in the living room? And, you know, maybe never. Maybe that's the problem. It's just a different kind of a thing.
I mean, potentially, I was reading this article, and I have two younger brothers that could kind of validate this. The concept of getting your entertainment in the living room does not exist to my brothers.
Yeah.
They don't. I have never seen my two younger brothers sit in the living room and watch TV. I've never seen them sit in the living room and play a video game. You know where they play the video games? On their computer. You know where they're watching their stuff? Yeah. On their tablets or on their computer. They don't need televisions. They don't need cable. They don't care for that stuff. They're consuming everything online. They have Netflix and they have a Roku. I actually do think they use a Roku more than anything else, which is astonishing to me because they don't really watch television, but they watch stuff on Roku, which I would never imagine that they would watch. I don't think the younger generation cares to the extent that we kind of would to have everything on a big screen TV in front of us.
Honestly, I sometimes think that we spend a lot of time trying to do this stuff, and then we finally get it and we realize, you know, what was the point of it all? You know, I've got a friend who just bought a bunch of Sonos equipment. He's been looking for some way to transmit music around his house for a long time, for whatever reason. And I spent thousands of dollars on this junk. He's got speakers and
He did the whole setup.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a friend that did it. It cost him about $3,500 to do it.
Right. So here's the thing. Like, A, this guy doesn't have a good taste in music, period. He's terrible.
What is he listening to?
I can't even tell you because it's just stuff. It's nothing mainstream. Or
is it like 80s freestyle?
No, it's just terrible stuff. So I don't understand. Like, I mean, I know enough about him to know he's not home every night cranking the music in every room of his house, cooking dinner and listening to music. So I know they like to entertain and they have people over. And so now we all have to listen to his crappy music in every room of the house now. And it's like, why are we, what happened here? You know, I mean, was it really necessary for this to be piped into all of the rooms? Like there's no place I can go now to get away from this.
it's become an intercom for shitty music.
Yeah. It's like, it's kind of a weird, you know, it's like the time you spend managing this music collection, like your whole life. And then you realize I don't listen to any of this really. And why was this so important? Like I think, you know, you just said something about someone with Roku. You know, my wife and I will walk in the living room at night and we'll watch a show or two. You know, sometimes it's on cable, like a recorded thing. Sometimes it's on demand. Sometimes it's on Roku. And that's pretty much the extent of it. And the whole surrounding stuff that goes around it doesn't matter. It's just you start the thing and you play it. You pause it occasionally to get a drink or something. And that's the whole experience. There's not a lot going on there. So I think overthinking this stuff is pointless because really, you know, TV watching is a passive experience. You're just detuning from the day, really, at least I am. I mean,
how much television are you consuming daily?
Not much. I mean, my wife and I watch a half an hour of TV at lunchtime. You know, we work at home. And so we'll watch like a half hour recorded show or half of an hour long show. And then at night, I would say we probably watch an hour and sometimes 2 hours, you know, depending like a show or two, you know.
But are you watching cable, though, or are you watching, you know, Roku or Netflix? Or?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. Netflix on Roku or Amazon, you know. We have some recorded shows, but not many.
It's nutty. I mean, it really the amount that we're paying for about an hour a day.
Yeah.
Of TV, right. You know.
And then, you know, like, God, if I could just figure out some way to get this in multiple rooms in my house at the same time for some reason. Like, I just don't, I don't know.
It's like a timeshare that you never use.
Well, it's weird what we, like, kind of stress over or spend time on, you know.
It's fascinating. So I'm thinking about returning that Apple TV.
Really?
I've used it twice, and I hate it.
Amazed by this.
I absolutely hate it, and I think Google TV is 1,000 times better. I don't care what anyone says.
Right.
I don't care. Before we wrap up, I did want to talk about the Apple story. I want to get your opinion on this, because there was a story that came out that said the iWatch could trigger sales up to $17.5 billion.
Right.
What do you think of this? It was a Morgan Stanley analyst that said that.
Mm-hmm.
In the first 12 months, by the way, first 12 months that they could generate $17.5 billion on an iWatch, assuming the price is going to be at $299. I'm just curious if you think that's a valid number.
I mean, I have no opinion on the number. I mean, I'm amused. I've been tweeting about this lately, like, we are just accepting that Apple has a watch. They're not selling a watch. No one's ever actually seen the watch.
They never commented on a watch.
But now we can use this as the basis for other stories. I don't know. I don't actually think... I shouldn't even say that. I was going to say, I don't think Apple can turn a watch into a viable new business. Because we're talking about Apple here. I suppose it's possible. This company does seem to have a weird habit of doing this kind of thing. But... I don't know. I just don't see. I've used this, like, I have a Fitbit now. I used to use a Nike Fuel Band. They have a watch on them, so you get that kind of thing. Certainly, there's an online services integration bit going on here. There's been some rumors about Apple wanting to get into the health stuff, and that would make some sense to me, I think. You know, them doing a Fitbit type thing or have Fitbit-like functionality be part of a smarter device that we might call a watch that, you know, has notifications and integrates with your phone and all that kind of stuff, I guess. I mean, but ultimately what you're talking about there is an accessory, really, right? It's not a standalone device necessarily, nor is it necessarily as so obviously necessary as an iPhone is. I mean, you know, a lot of people complain about my initial reaction to the iPad in 2010, but my initial reaction to the iPhone in 2007 was quite different. That was clearly revolutionary. So I don't understand how a watch is.
I think this was the greatest fake play Apple that any company could have done. They started. You want to know. We've been talking about a conspiracy theory show here on the network. You want to know a major conspiracy? I think they leaked this entire iWatch thing 2 years before. Responses. 2 years before they even had an idea what they were going to do, to see what the response is going to be and to see what the competitors are going to do, because the Samsung, all these companies want to jump on this before Apple does, because they want to gain leverage in the market. They saw what happened to the iPad. They saw what happened with the iPhone. So they want that next big item.
Oh, everyone does. Samsung,
Sony did the smartwatch. Well, Sony was doing it for a while. They just put out a new one. It's junk.
Right, but our world is so broken that when Samsung actually ships and sells a watch, the story is that they're competing with Apple.
They copied Apple's iWatch. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
You know, and I'm like, I'm sorry, guys, but if they actually ship a product and consumers are using it, they're not copying Apple.
But you know what the problem here is, Paul? The concept that we have, right? Like what we think this iWatch is going to be. And I could tell you right now, we have 250 people in the chat room. 90% of them, they're envisioning the same exact device. A curved,
flat band
that displays everything. It's iOS-like and... It's everything is perfect.
Only fit a wrist that is the size of Steve Jobs' wrist.
Yeah, I mean, it really, that is the device that everybody's envisioning.
Yeah.
But the reality is, technologically, we can't do that device yet. We're not there. We're not making curved glass devices.
Sure.
I mean,
that's the problem.
It's just not there. So we're talking 5 to 10 years away from this magical device that we actually want to see. So whatever any company puts out, like a Samsung, for example, put out that watch, everybody's looking at it to go, that's it.
It looks like a giant diver's watch. You know, it's huge.
They're like, all it is, it's a tiny LCD on like a band. Well, of course that's what it's going to be. We're not there yet for the tech.
It's not the future. Sorry.
We're not in the future yet. And it's this weird thing where, you know, with the iPad, they were able to pull it off. Nobody had done it. And yeah, it was a future-like device. The iPhone, too. Nobody had done it, but it made sense. It was still an evolution. We didn't get this, like, magic projection. Do you remember a couple of years ago with the, I think it was with the iPhone 5, Fox News here, local yes. New York, they reported this crazy, weird, like, the phone from like 2040. That's what they put out. Yep. With a projection, with a hologram and a projection. And I'm thinking, you know what the problem is? I don't blame them. This is what everybody thinks the next device is going to be. And I think we need to get out of that mindset. I think we have to understand that a lot of these devices will not happen like that. We're not getting that device. The closest we'll get right now is probably like a Fitbit style device. And you know what? If Apple puts that out, it's going to be a complete disappointment.
Yeah, and it's probably ironic that some of the company's biggest fans are the ones responsible for these kind of fake PR bits, you know, that like this is what a next iPhone will look like, you know, and it's like, nope. Or this is what the, you know, iWatch will look like. And then it comes out and it's kind of pedestrian compared to this future vision that they had. But that's, you know, it's the weirdness of Apple's.
I mean, I like how in this article they're saying it's going to be a $17.5 billion revenue industry in the first 12 months if it's priced at $299. Well, what device are we talking about? What are we selling?
Every morning I get up and I read the New York Times, and they'll write up. I'm trying to see if I can find one. You know, they wrote a thing about batteries the other day, which, depending on the edition you read, actually had the word Apple in the headline. But let me see if I can find it. Yeah, I can't find it now, but it included all this kind of stuff about, well, you know, Apple is known to be working on a watch and they're working on this kind of technology and they're doing this and they're going to have super thin, bendable, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, whoa, hold on a second. You have just presented a bunch of stuff as if they are facts. What are you talking about? You know? And it's like they kind of bend over backwards to kiss up to Apple without even stopping to wonder for a second if any of this stuff is true.
Yeah.
I don't think they care.
Hellcat in our chat does say the LG G Flex has a curved screen. Absolutely. And I'm getting that in the next couple days to review. AT&T is sending it to me. I've actually rebuilt my relationship with AT&T after the fallout that we had from that HTC nice. Phone. I pretty much called them out on not sending me units because I gave a honest review of that awful phone. See what happens when you're honest?
I do. I see. Yeah.
You see what happens? You get blackballed in this industry.
Yep.
I feel like I'm like a boxer from like the 1920s. I won't work with the main promoter anymore. I'm blackballed. I have to go wrestle in like Bulgaria.
McCarthy's calling. He's got some hearings you need to attend. Yeah.
Paul, before we wrap up, a couple more things I want to talk about, and I really want to get your opinion on this. But before I go into the next story, I do want to thank everybody again for tuning in our 200th episode. If you want to continue supporting the GFK Network, if you want to support What the Tech, you could do so by using our Amazon affiliate link. I just sent Paul a $7 wire the other day. It's a USB cable, and I did it with our Amazon affiliate program, which you guys support and you guys buy stuff with. Every time you buy something on Amazon, we get a tiny little credit. Suncast just posted in the chat room. It's gfq.co/Amazon. gfq.co/Amazon. And we could do these upgrades. So whenever we need to get a new wire or new cameras or whatever, robots. We want this entire studio automated with robots. We could do so by using the Amazon credits that we build up in our affiliate program. Again, I want to thank you guys for using it. gfq.co/Amazon. And just, you know, click on it whenever you're ready. Just buy something. Paul got $7 worth. You know how many copies of The Walking Dead people bought on Amazon
for us to pay for that cable?
You know, I could actually do the math. I get about like 30 cents on each episode. So quite a few.
That many.
Paul, Facebook turned 10 today.
Dude.
Yeah. 10 year anniversary of Facebook. Before we wrap up.
I looked at that paper app, by the way.
How do you like it? I saw that you were positive about it. I actually liked it.
I like it a lot.
I haven't tried it yet.
I think that's going to be Facebook. I think that becomes Facebook.
So what is it like? Tell me. I haven't used it.
Well, it kind of presents things as stories, and so it's obviously like a screen, smartphone screen. So the top is a photo and whatever the thing is, and at the bottom are these kind of cards, and you can flip through them, and those are the other things that would be in your timeline. And if you tap on the big one, it goes full screen, and you can see whatever all of it is. You can respond, like it or comment and so forth. You can swipe in all the different directions. You can come in and out and go left, right, and so forth. And it's kind of like Facebook rethought for these kinds of devices, from the ground up is kind of a new thing. And obviously it doesn't have every single thing that's in Facebook, and maybe it never will, I don't know. But it's really just about seeing what's going on in your world, if you will.
Yeah.
I think it's a nice app. It's pretty.
Yeah, I saw some screenshots. I got to play around with it. Is it on Android yet? Because I don't see it in the App Store.
No, it's just iOS.
So crazy. Yeah. But Facebook did turn 10, and the bigger story is the impact it has had on society and the way that we communicate and with the way that we distribute information and the way that we consume information. For many people, they're not going to CNN. They're not going to Fox. They're not going to whatever. They're on Facebook all day, and that's their source of information. Also, it's been a tremendous change as far as communicating with people. When this thing came out in 2004, was I out of school at that point? I can't remember. I didn't get it immediately, but I got it later on. And, I mean, to me, I thought it was stupid. And then I got it, like, in 2009. It really clicked. I'm like, wow, this is actually really cool. You can kind of keep tabs on everybody. You can keep in touch with everybody. It's really changed. If you look at it, it's become part of our lives where what do? You wake up in the morning and you check your Facebook for many people. That's what they do. I do think that it has become a part of society. I just don't know if the impact is totally positive and what's the negative of this. Are we consuming way too much information? Are we keeping tabs on way too many people? And are we providing people way too many personal stuff?
Yeah, I mean, I sort of reevaluate my Facebook usage as I reevaluate my usage of any technology. I mean, I think I do go overboard with things like, here's what I'm having for dinner type posts. I've sort of tried to keep those to I'm not eating macaroni at home, like this is some event and dinner or something. But, you got to wonder. I mean, there's a weirdness to that. But I think the underlying strength of Facebook is that it lets you keep in touch with people you don't get to see regularly. And it is very successful at that. Today, yesterday, the day before, basically every day, I've interacted with people that are related to me or friends of mine that live on the other side of the country or wherever. I don't see them. And so they post pictures and we interact. And I'm sorry, but that's amazing and it's special and it's useful. And I think that Facebook always has a role for that very reason. I think it's important.
Do you see anybody else kind of coming in on their turf and becoming the Facebook of, the future? Do you think at this point there's so many people connected? You always read the headlines where people are saying, well, the kids aren't using Facebook anymore and expect an 85% drop in Facebook in the next year, which I think
the kids won't always be kids. The kids have attention deficit disorder, and that's fascinating, but they're not paying the bills either. And so eventually they're going to get jobs and they're going to settle down. They're going to slow down. And Facebook will seem interesting to them again. And so this week they can pay Flappy Birds, whatever that stupid game is, and they can post things like Polaroids that they don't even know what a Polaroid is. And Instagram. But eventually, real life is going to set in. And
by the way, I downloaded Flappy Birds. I downloaded that game.
Yeah,
what?
It's basically like the pipes from Mario.
It's so stupid.
Yeah, it's terrible.
I was reading a thing someone put, and they wrote, how soon until someone, and there was a picture of Mario, they said, how soon until a kid says, this is a ripoff of Flappy Bird?
Yes. Oh, I'm sure it's already happened.
Yeah.
Yep.
What was that? I think it was a Billy Joel song. Some like Disney star sang Vienna.
Right.
By Billy Joel. And in the comments, so I was looking at the Billy Joel comments from the concert, and all these kids were writing, why is he singing so-and-so's song? She did it so much better. Why is this old guy singing this song? And I just wanted to just punch the screen at that point.
Ignorance is at least understandable in a child.
Do you think Facebook and stuff has made kids ignorant? Because I really don't think...
No.
I was
no,
so...
I actually know, because you're Facebook is actually kind of better than a lot of the stupid stuff that's been going on with news sites online, because you're kind of forced to look at stuff
that you normally wouldn't. Yeah.
That you don't necessarily would have seen otherwise. I mean, I learn things from Facebook because people I know posted them. I don't always agree with them. I mean, there's I know a guy out west who's always posting these kind of crazy, you think this doesn't exist, but kind of far-leaning, left-leaning political stuff, right? Normally you think of the crazy political stuff as being like from the right, but this guy's kind of off the charts on the other direction. And I've often thought about blocking it, but I thought, you know, I need to know that this is there and to understand it and whatever. I mean,
I actually think the best thing about Facebook is that you discover people's crazy that you didn't realize. Oh. Like you discover the type of crazy that they are. Yep. And that's been amazing, because there are people that I've worked with. There are people that I actually do business deals with. And then you realize, like, oh my God, this person is so unhinged. It's out of control. People
either
that
are like pointlessly religious or, like, you know, just
everything.
Like
when I'm reading, the first thing I do now, whenever like I were doing business with somebody for the network, I always look at their Facebook. I find their Facebook and I see what they're writing. And if they're going to put that in public, who knows what they're going to do with me? Like, it's just crazy. Some of the stuff that I read. And I recently had to delete someone and tell them that I won't be working with them because of the stuff that I saw on their Facebook. And it wasn't political. It wasn't, their affiliation to whatever. It was just like crazy things that they were writing.
Yeah, no, I there's a guy I grew up with who's, I still see him, you know, a couple times a year. He's a good guy. I mean, I like him, you know, but his Facebook stuff was insane. And it was not borderline. It was some racist stuff in there. There was some crazy gun ownership baloney in there. And I had a conversation with him one time where I said, you know, we grew up together. I mean, we went to the same schools. We had the same experience. I mean, what happened to you? You know? Yeah. And of course, he's looking at me like I'm equally out of my head. But I had to block that. I mean, obviously, I'm not there to listen to extreme viewpoints or take part in some jihad or whatever.
Well, but nobody cares for a moderate, Paul. Nobody cares
if
you're
a
moderate.
Kind of boring like that, I guess. Yeah.
One of my friends, she recently became a vegan. Mm. And you know what? I'm all for it. I know many people that have become vegans. I envy them that they have the ability to do this. Wow. I can't, even if I wanted to. I have no self-control. I haven't had a drink in 3 days, and that's a huge accomplishment for me, Paul. Huge. Which I'm going to finish off by saying I will probably have a drink tonight. But she became a vegan. I was a vegan for 5 days. That's besides the point, Vicky, in our chat room. That was a huge thing here. I became a vegan for 5 days. But she became a vegan, and now her entire newsfeed is animals being killed. And how awful we are to do this. Like, the factories and stuff. So I took them out. I unfollowed them. You could do that on Facebook now. I no longer need to see it. Amazing. Right. Makes me so happy. So 10 years Facebook, we now have found out how crazy people are. And that's great. Yep. I mean, that's all I've learned in the last 10 years on how unstable all my friends are. And you know what? They probably think the same about me. So here's to it. All right, Paul. Time to wrap it up. WinSuperSide.com, all things Paul Theroux. You can follow Paul on Twitter at Theroux. And you can follow me on Twitter at Andrew Zarian. I'm always looking for new friends because I'm alone in this world. WinSuperSide.com. Also, Paul, tomorrow, Windows Weekly, which should be a great episode. You and Mary Jo Foley will be discussing everything that has to do with Microsoft, Windows, technology, and I'm sure there's going to be a lot to talk about with the recent shakeup at Microsoft. I'm excited for it, Paul. I'll be listening. It's 2 o'clock still, right?
Yes. Yep.
2 o'clock. And again, guys, our 200th episode, I want to thank you guys for sticking around. And the numbers are growing, and we're going to have a lot of new stuff for you. Paul and I have been discussing ways that we could give back and ways that we could do some more shows and different things. So in the coming months, we're going to be changing stuff up. So hopefully it'll be good and you guys will be happy. Until next time, guys, take care. We'll see you all next week on What the Tech. Good night.